Planning Subcommittee on General Government, and we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 624. And Ms. Mathey will direct us through 624 and tell us what it's all about and what we're looking at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senate Bill 624 will allow the Advocacy Commission's office to enter into an interagency agreement with the Bureau of Labor and Industry for administrative support, which I've loosely defined as accounting, budgeting, personnel, and payroll services. Currently, the agency has a contract with the Department of Administrative Services for these services. In addition, the bill creates a board made up of the chairpersons of each of the commissions and the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries to set the qualifications and hire the administrator of the Advocacy Commission's office. And again, currently that's done by the director of the Department of Administrative Services. At your places, you'll see the fiscal impact statements. And Mr. Chair, I could go over that now, or we could see if anybody wanted to testify, and then we could open a work session, and I could go through the fiscal impact or answer any questions.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, just a procedural question. I'm sorry I didn't get to you and Ms. Manthe sooner about this, but I know that there has been some discussion on the Senate side with respect to the Advocacy Commission's move over to Boley, which I support. I think Boley, given the portfolio of work that they do, and the commission, given the portfolio of work that they do, is probably a better fit there. But in conversations with Senators Carter, Winters, and Gordley, there has been expressed both at the committee level and with those three senators a desire to have a budget note directing there to be a really serious interim inquiry into these pockets of minority women in emerging business that we have stashed throughout five state agencies, plus the work of the advocacy commissions, to really seriously look at what are we buying. And over time, we have ended up giving the Advocacy Commission certain assignments and then not provided the funding to do it. And then the legislature has been mad at the Advocacy Commissions for not discharging the job that we asked them to do kind of vaguely and then didn't give them the money to do. And what I'm trying to figure out is what the appropriate vehicle for such a discussion is. We have heard in this committee about these activities being so dispersed over five agencies. We've heard in my subcommittee about the activities being similarly dispersed. And I am simply trying to find out, and I should have had this conversation with you earlier, but I'm just trying to find out, what's the best vehicle in which to insert the budget note to, assuming that everybody, the co-chairs, agree, what's the best vehicle to insert a budget note to make sure that this discussion occurs through the interim, hopefully with input from the advocacy commissions and a report back either to the February legislature or, more appropriately, now that I'm looking at Ms. Farrington, because we've chatted about this too, more appropriately in 2009, to give Ms. Farrington and the advocacy commissions adequate time to sort of regain their footing and then be able to come to the legislature in 2009 with a comprehensive suite of bills or a single bill designed to raise the visibility of minorities, women, and emerging businesses in the state in a way that heretofore they have not, I think, been clearly defined. We're spending $11 million and still heard in the context of the transportation budgets hearing that minority contractors and women-owned businesses feel aggrieved and don't have the portal through which to enter state contracting. And so I raise it for the committee's consideration. I think we have a number of opportunities where to place such a budget note, and I just wanted to at least open the discussion here and express my willingness to put it in any of the budgets that I remain responsible for.
Okay. Representative Cohen.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask the senator a question, if it's all right. And that is the, are you in?
Is it all right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's all right.
Okay.
Is the budget note more for us and for the legislature to remind us in terms of what we're doing, or is it to try to give direction to the department?
Yes. It's both. I think that this has been an issue, and when you say the department, it's whichever department we place it with. I don't know whether Bully, whose budget has already gone, whether or not this would be a good convening spot, particularly given that I think 426 is going to pass and the advocacy commissions will move under the umbrella of Bully to provide accounting and what I call backroom services. I don't know whether Bully's the right spot. Oregon Economic and Community Development is the right spot. That budget still hasn't gone. ODOT is in kind of a unique situation because it has both certification issues, and I think we'd have to look carefully if we directed ODOT to be the source of this, given that they have a couple of different missions, and I'm not sure this would be a good fix at ODOT. But I want to remind the legislature that in a number of people's opinion, we have not done a very good job. We're spending $11 million. We still don't. If I were a minority female emerging business paving contractor, I still wouldn't know who to call. And so I think trying to bring some profile to the issue, trying to bring resolution to the issue, trying to find out what we're spending $11 million to accomplish when we still have people sitting in hearing rooms saying you're not getting the job done. So I want a budget note to memorialize direction to the legislature that we've got to do better in this area, and I'd like direction to an agency to be the convening responsible party, and I just simply don't know where the best place to put that is. And the reason that I ask it now is that it may come out in the testimony where would be a good agency locus to convene the discussion. And I'm sure Ms. Suzuki and Ms. Farrington may have some guidance given the conversations I know the two of them have been having. Senator Devlin, a font of all wisdom, may have some guidance. But I just raised it at this point because both I want to capture instruction to the legislature to remind ourselves, and I want a focal point in an agency, but I don't know which.
Seeing Senator Devlin has arrived in the room, and since he heard, I think, enough of Senator Johnson's testimony, and since he is one of the chief sponsors of this particular bill, I'm wondering if he would like to help us a little bit as we work our way through this, if you would, Senator.
Mr. Chair, as Senator Devlin comes up, I've mixed apples and oranges, and in fairness to him, I just want to tell him what we're talking about. Not only this bill, of which I'm supportive of, but I'm trying to find a home for a budget note to direct a little bit more in-depth discussion of issues surrounding women, minority, and emerging small business to draw together all of the disparate places. In five agencies, we have these activities. We have two people doing it in the governor's office, and I'm still not sure that we're hitting the mark with respect to deliverables on behalf of a community that at least we heard in the transportation budget feels deeply underserved.
Mr. Chairman, I think I understand Senator Johnson's concern. And would you like me to address the bill generally or her concern?
Your pleasure, of course, Senator, but would like to have your thoughts on her concerns, too.
Well, I think her concern is...
For the record, please.
Yes, Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, I think Senator Johnson's concern is a valid concern. I believe that the advocacy commissions might be a good place to have a portion of that discussion. I think, unfortunately, though, I believe their resources are going to be somewhat limited, and I do not know if to get basically to pass this burden on to them, given their limited resources, would be doing justice to the issue that you're presenting. And I think it actually also begs that question that we also always have to face with all practically any issue in this building is just how many agencies are involved. As you know, my Natural Resource Committee is having the morning off, so that's why I'm here. But if I tried to list all the agencies that have some involvement in water, we might be here for the next 10 to 15 minutes. But I think Senator Johnson's concern is legitimate. I think putting it here and actually giving in some indication, though, that this should be a broader discussion between all of the agencies that would potentially have some involvement. And I guess the first on those lists would probably be economic development and the Department of Administrative Services.
Mr. Chair, may I respond?
Sir, certainly. Senator Johnson.
I think right now my predisposition would be to give the agency responsibility to convene this discussion to economic development. I never envisioned asking the advocacy commissions to undertake this inquiry because, first of all, they have no money, and even though the formidable Ms. Farrington has returned, it still is not on a full-time basis. I would see the advocacy commissions being part of the discussion, not being the fiscally responsible convener. I just think that's too great a burden to place on them as they're trying to get situated in a new place and figure out what their job is. But certainly when you think about the governor's office, DCVS, OECDD, ODOT, the advocacy commissions, I'm missing another agency. I got governor's office, but there are two people there, so maybe count the governor's office twice. I just can't remember the other one, but we've got all of this activity going on, and I think precious little to show for it, at a cost of $11 million. At a minimum, I want somebody to be able to open the phone book and feel as though they have found the portal through which to enter state government. By the time they call the governor's office, they're probably already so miffed that I just don't think we're being as helpful as we could be.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Senator Johnson. And on that note of being able to open the phone book and find who you want to talk to, I recall one of my first sessions here when I was trying to find out who was responsible for the regulation of child care centers. And I found a Children's Services Division, which I believe that was the proper name for it then, still is, I believe, that you would think would be in probably the Department of Human Services. It's in the Employment Department for the regulation of child care centers. So there's a lot in state government that you could open a phone book and not find who to call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, not to bore you with my prepared testimony, but if I could just make a few comments about the advocacy commissions and the importance of Senate Bill 624, I would be most appreciative.
Thank you, Senator. We would welcome those comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 624 moves the Office of Advocacy Commissions from the Department of Administrative Services to the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. And I will leave my prepared text at that point and just give you kind of a general idea of how this bill came about. I was approached by the governor's office last fall to look at if there might be a more appropriate location for the Office of Advocacy Commissions other than the Department of Administrative Services. And I entered into a discussion with the advocacy commissions and with the governor's office and a number of others, and finally determined that the best place probably to place the administrative, in a sense, nexus of the Office of Advocacy Commissions was at BOLI, the Bureau of Labor and Industries. The commissioner there, Commissioner Gardner, was very supportive and remains very supportive, and the governor is supportive of this move. Just briefly, just to recall that many of the advocacy commissions face their origins go back actually to the ATIA administration. Both the Women's Commission, the Black Affairs Commission, and the Hispanic Affairs Commission all date back to the ATIA administration. In fact, the predecessor to the Commission on Hispanic Affairs actually dates back to the McCall administration. The Commission on Asian Affairs was actually put in place at the request of, I believe, Representative Lim was involved, and actually came about under the Kitzhaber administration. However, the advocacy commissions have had a very difficult time in the last 5 years. In the 2002 special sessions, they were defunded. In the 2003 session, they were funded, but with an other funds appropriation. All of you that have been in Ways and Means any time, you understand what this, what it means when you have an other funds appropriation like this, and you don't have any fees, and nobody's paying you for any licenses or anything. It basically means that if you go out and raise the money, you can spend it. We give you the authority to spend it if you can raise it. After that three-year period in 2005, there was a successful effort to reorganize the commissions in terms of their support, and that's how the Office of Advocacy Commissions was created. I think it passed by a very comfortable margin in both the Senate and the House. It was SB 359. This bill merely moves where their, so to speak, their administrative location is to the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and I think it's a good move for the advocacy commissions. I believe they will have some challenges in terms of getting their work, back up to the level that they were previous to 2002. I think they also have some challenges in the sense that I think there's a commitment from the governor's office to work with each of the advocacy commissions to fill vacancies, because there are a number of vacancies on each of the boards, and I think all the chairmen of the various advocacy commissions would like to see those vacancies filled, and filled with people that would
like to do work. Additional people that would like to do work.
So with that, I'll close and just be available to answer any questions and run on to my next meeting.
Thank you, Senator. We appreciate very much your stopping and sharing your thoughts with us this morning on this, and we appreciate your sponsorship of this this bill, which should be a positive move for the Advocacy Commission.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, I will see you this afternoon.
Thank you. Plus, I can find a good excuse. Check. We're going to close the public hearing then on Senate Bill 624 and open a work session on Senate Bill 624. And with that, Ms. Matthew, would you walk us through the LFO recommendations?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As I mentioned at your places, you should find a copy of the fiscal impact on Senate Bill 624. Working with the Bureau of Labor and Industries and the Department of Administrative Services and to some extent the Advocacy Commission's office, we've put together this this fiscal. The cost, comparing the cost of what the Department of Administrative Services estimated it was going to cost them in the next biennium to support the office, is slightly lower than what Boley initially has estimated that it's going to cost them. But keep in mind that this is new. We won't really know what the cost is going to be until there's a successful negotiation between the office and Boley about what services are going to be provided. Because the commission or the office has got off to a slow start, there's not a lot of history in terms of transaction volume, so there's a lot of unknowns. But nonetheless, I think Boley did a good job of saying, here's what it might cost us to do that. As you can see, it would be an increase in general fund for the offices. The Advocacy Commission's office of $22,345. When we get to the budget part, you can see that the Legislative Fiscal Office has a recommendation of how to accommodate that and still be general fund neutral. And again, talking with the Bureau of Labor and Industries, we're not recommending that we put an other funds expenditure limitation increase in Senate Bill 624 to allow the department time to figure out what the cost will really be, and then they can come back to the emergency board once they know the level of service that they're going to provide and the workload associated with that. So there would be no amendments needed to 6.4, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, at the point that the chair is looking for a motion on Senate Bill 624, I'd be prepared to make one, but I don't want to truncate the discussion.
Let's entertain the motion, and then we can go from there with any discussion.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 624 to the committee of the full committee on Ways and Means with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Johnson moves Senate Bill 624 to the full committee on Ways and Means with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Palizio.
Mr. Chair, sometimes in this building you have to trust people, because from what we've talked about today and the degree of uncertainty that exists, it's hard to feel extraordinarily confident in making this vote. However, having said that, obviously this is negotiations, or at least there's been a discussion on the Senate side, and it seems like the parties are want to go forward. So I'll be an aye, with the hope that this is a decision that is a wise one for everyone involved.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Adding to Representative Galizio's desire to trust people, this is sort of like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid clasping hands and jumping off the cliff. I hope that you are also anticipating this budget note, and I have not heard anybody express any concern about it. I'm kind of moving ahead thinking that maybe economic development would be a good place to house it. With the chair's indulgence, I wouldn't mind hearing from Ms. Farrington just to see if she's generally in accord with that. She's nodded her head, but I'd love to have it on the record for some guidance about where this higher-level discussion that would have the advocacy commissions at the table but would be a broader agency-wide discussion should occur. And if she could help us wrestle with this, I would certainly appreciate it.
Ms. Farrington.
Mr. Chair, while she's coming up, Senator Johnson mentioned that she didn't hear anything about the budget note idea. I have some comments regarding that I'll be happy to address later.
All right. Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, good morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rosalind Farrington. I'm the relatively newly appointed administrator of the Advocacy Commission's office. And Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, in response to your question, I think that the broader look is a great idea. So then we could at least have the conversation. I think economic development is probably a better place, because as Senator Devlin reported earlier, we don't have the budget or the staffing to be fully responsible for such a undertaking. But we definitely, in my discussions with Carol Suzuki and other people from the Advocacy Commissions, definitely are in support of the idea of such a broader look and of our involvement as far as being either a convener or working. The budget note maybe would put us working in partnership with economic development to make sure that we are not just a side note, but an active part of the conversation of how it looks. And we'd also be happy to take a look at that budget note, the language of it, as it's crafted, to make sure it's crafted in a way that we are given full voice.
That's what I needed to hear, sir.
Thank you. I have just quickly one question for you. Regardless of where this budget note is placed, and since Representative Palizio has brought up the subject of trust, can I trust that your office will make some noise if the budget note is put someplace and no attention is paid to it?
Chair Jensen and members of the committee, you can absolutely trust that our office will make a noise to the appropriate places.
I do think, regardless of where the budget note is and whatever we have, that there is a certain amount of responsibility with the director of the agency to keep the legislature informed of where they want it to go, and I think she understands where Senator Johnson wants to go and appreciates that. So, and I understand sometimes the difficulty that directors of agencies have in doing that. But Representative Crummell, is this an appropriate time? No, we're on 624. We'll get to the budget note.
Well, it may affect 624. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. But I do have questions about 624 also.
Okay, please.
In Section 3, it's repealing ORS 185.015. I went to look up what that is, and that is the rulemaking authority of the administrator. So the question becomes then, who makes the rules for the advocacy commissions or for the office of the advocacy commissions if that's being repealed?
I was afraid, Mr. Chair, you were going to direct that to and Representative Krummel is absolutely correct, and there was one mention made of that in the policy committee, and I will say that I don't know. That was an issue that was brought out, and I'm hoping that maybe there's some folks that are in the audience that could help me out about why that was necessary.
I don't see anybody racing to
the
top.
Yeah, I see that. It's like a, Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Well, the next witness is coming up. Maybe I could just offer the editorial comment that I think the mission of the advocacy commissions has been so obfuscated over time. I'm not quite sure, and I would beg correction, that the advocacy commissions know what they are supposed to be doing or who they're supposed to be doing it in consort with. I am less disturbed that the rulemaking authority is eliminated in this bill, pending a deeper, more structural conversation about what is the role of the advocacy commissions. I've talked to Ms. Suzuki, for example, and once upon a time we had prescribed in statute that the Commission on Asian Affairs would produce a street festival or a festival on a prescribed date. I'm not sure that it is the business of the legislature to be telling the advocacy commissions what work they ought to perform, let alone on what dates they ought to perform it. And I still am confused about whether or not the role of the advocacy commissions is to deliver policy and observations that would inform legislative decision-making and policy creation, whether or not they are external community advocates. I think there has been some lack of clarity about the legislative expectations of what's the product, what's the deliverable. Should it be that we expect at the beginning of every regular legislative session a suite of bills from the Advocacy Commission addressing the kind of what I view as systemic problems about what doors are open to minority contracting community or those kinds of issues? Or are they promoting activities in a broader constituent community? I don't know. And if there is clarity and I'm just unaware of it, I beg for correction and assistance, but I my suspicion is that there hasn't been a lot of clarity about it.
Thank you. My name is Johnny Lake. I'm the chair of the Commission on Black Affairs. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to speak and other legislators. Is this on? I'm probably one of the senior people who serve on the commissions. I've been here throughout the great description that Senator Johnson gave of the shifts and changes in the commissions. And coming from the historical perspective, the commissions were clearly defined in the way rules were made, the way the organization functioned, and it incorporated all the commissioners, the administrator, and the representatives from the legislature who were part of the commissions. All of these people were involved in decision making. I think the shift and change that happened recently, where authority was given to an administrator of a department to make decisions for the commission, was something that we had difficulties with because it took the voice, the many voices, away from the decision making process that had been part of the commission's history. And so at this point, I think that insertion in there is to again return that decision-making process back to the organizational structure that had done this for, I think, the history of the commissions, rather than leave it with one single administrator. So in our case, the relationship with the Department of the Boley is the administrator of Boley, or the appointment, or the person who's appointed to join with the chairs of the commissions, is going to be part of that decision-making process. So again, it will be a collaborative decision-making process which I think is a more healthy and more productive way to make decisions. So history helps us understand some of these shifts and turns, and you did a great job of describing how, I mean, I've been accused of being a lobbyist here in the Capitol, and it's often awkward to try to figure out how am I considered a lobbyist for some of the poorest and most disenfranchised people in this state. You know, if I was lobbying for a business group or an organization that actually had money, then I could consider myself a lobbyist. But I'm lobbying for people who deserve to be included in the democratic process of our state. That is not a business proposition, and I don't think it's a lobbyist to say we should spread this democracy as wide as we can to all of our citizens. I think the conversations about women and minorities and poor people and all of those is consistent with our whole history as a democracy. It's not anything new. These issues have not just shown up. And I think the idea that we can talk about broadening this is exciting to me for us as citizens of our state, because those communities have typically been the places where we've had the most difficulties in education, housing, health care, jobs, all of these things. And so moving those communities to a greater level of participation in our society will, I think, ensure us a better future for those same communities and our larger community as a whole.
Senator Johnson.
Conversely, Mr. Chair, and I think this is where some of the lack of clarity occurs, in my tenure in the legislature, I recall someone who was either adjunct to or perhaps a board member of the Hispanic Commission carrying the card of the commission and actually doing lobbying on behalf of another organization. And I only point that out not as a criticism, but as a general symptom of the lack of clarity of the role of the advocacy commissions. I would welcome having some briefing at the beginning of the session from the commissions that help, and I'm just making this up as an example of something that would be useful, but some kind of a structured presentation that would say this is the course of work that we have undertaken over the interim, or I don't know what we're going to call the space between sessions now that we got more sessions, but this is the policy discussion that we've undertaken during the interim. These are the communities of interest that we have tapped into. This is the record of our proceedings. And as a result, we recommend to the whatever number legislature it is the following policy bill to address this problem. In that respect, then, you could become a lobbyist for a concept that had flowed from the work of the commissions at a policy level informing decisions in this building. But I'm not sure that all of the commissions had been on the same page, that all of the commissions operated the same way, that they had the same rules of engagement. And that's why when Rosalind reappeared in Ms. Farrington reappeared in the building, I was just thrilled about it, because I think with her formidable organizational skills, it'll help inform the discussion of all of the commissions so that once again they can achieve, I think, the kind of status conferred on the Commission on Indian Affairs, where we really are looking for policy guidance out of that office, and that hasn't always been the case in my experience with the other advocacy commissions.
No, it hasn't, Mr. Chair and other legislators. The history question, again, I think is really a relevant one in the sense that prior to the taking away our funding, I think our commissions did not work very well in coordination with each other. We tended to be siloed in typical fashion of the communities that we represent. Latinos over here, blacks over here, women over here, and Asians over here. When all the money was gone, I think we found we had to grab onto each other in order to just simply survive. And I think over the last few years, we have developed incredibly better lines of communication and working relationships across commissions. And since we do have many very similar issues, we have found ourselves working together on specific issues that affect all of the communities represented by the commissions. And I think the history of certain people taking positions on political issues, I think, is a lobbyist stance. But I don't think that commission's role is to take those kind of political positions that could put us in position of being lobbyists. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Representative Thomas.
Well, my
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I went back and went ahead and picked up 185, and 185 describes all of the commissions and what they're supposed to do. And the Office of Commission Advocate, or the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office, their statutory responsibility is to provide administrative support to the four commissions that are named. That's it. My understanding of state law, however, over the last however many years has been that in order for anybody to do anything, except maybe go to the restroom, we have to have rules, that the agencies are supposed to make rules. Now, maybe what it is is that because all of the commissions have the ability to make rules, and they do their own thing, and they have their own statutory responsibilities. So maybe given that, maybe the commission's office doesn't need to have rulemaking authority. I don't know. And so I'm just making an observation, I guess, that it's interesting that we're repealing that. And maybe I'm making a bigger issue out of it than
I'm going to make a quantum leap here and assume that the director of DAS might shed some light on why they previously had rulemaking authority and what, if any, consequences that might have been. Is Mr. Ball still in the room after I... Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Jensen. My name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the Director of the Department of Administrative Services. Possibly, maybe you can help me frame the question up specifically. Representative Kremel, your question was, why is rulemaking authority deleted from Senate Bill 624?
Yes.
And
I don't know, maybe the office doesn't need the ability to make rules, but like I said, I thought that to do anything in state government, except maybe go to the bathroom, an agency had to be able to make a rule for it. And so I don't know if the office needs to have rulemaking authority for their service to the commissions, and maybe it doesn't.
Well, I wasn't involved in the direct crafting of the language of 624, but as I understand, the interest was that the commissions be allowed to have their independence to pursue issues of concern to them, placing more responsibility on them, with the office being the administrative function in support of the commissions.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. Mr. Ball, has the Advocacy Commission ever written a rule?
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, I would have to take a look back at the file again to see if there is. I don't believe there was anything substantial written during the short period of time that there was an executive director of the office. There were some attempts made to create some continuity, but with the concern over the different interests of the commissions, I don't believe there was much progress made at that time.
Hello.
Changing subjects. Mr. Ball, in your mind, what is the role of the Advocacy Commission?
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, let me preface it this way. I think this is my observation over the years of the different commissions and the Office of Advocacy. I think we have been remiss in recognizing the need in the state for more continuity and recognition of our minority populations. I don't think we've adequately addressed the issues that concern those people in this state. I feel that the Office of Advocacy Commission, the Advocacy Commission office is critical to, is a critical component to that success. If there isn't some coordination between agencies and state government, the commissions, and the public, we are not going to make any great stride in that area at all. Senator Johnson mentioned minority women and emerging small businesses. There's work there to be done. There's coordinated work there to be done. But with the fact that we have disbanded the commissions, defunded them, brought them back together, we just haven't had the opportunity for the system in and of itself to gel for us to progressively move forward. That, I think, is the role of the Office of Advocacy.
Coordination, Mr. Chair. Coordination oversight.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Ball. I'm sorry to put you on the stand.
This is a very important topic in a agency that needs some serious attention.
Thank you. And members, I have requested that the staff for the policy committee come down and brief us if there was any discussion in the policy committee. And in the event that there was no discussion in the policy committee and there's not a good response to that question from the staff, I've asked the our staff to contact Legislative Council and whoever it was that drafted this particular legislation to stand by so that they may come down and provide us information on that.
Okay.
And we are at a moment here of pause. Please, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. While we're at this moment of pause, if Representative Crummell has any other recommendations with respect to the budget note, I would love hearing them because this conversation and Ms. Farrington's comments, Mr. Ball's comments are leading me, and Mr. Lake's leading me very much in the direction to insert this budget note into economic development's budget and ask them to be the lead agency in convening the discussion. Because I think really what we're talking about at the core here is economic opportunity. And I would beg correction if I'm wrong, but we certainly heard from folks in the context of, and I see heads going, which makes me feel better, we certainly heard in the context of ODOT's budget that contracting opportunities, access to contracting opportunities, level playing field with respect to ability to access state work are pretty high on all of the constituents' list, and that seems to me to speak to economic development. But I'd welcome your input.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if this is a...
This is Dana.
Are you Dana?
Please. We have...
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good. Dana Richardson, Senate Education General Government Committee Administrator. What can I help with?
The question has come up as to why Section 3, eliminating repealing 185.015.
This is Senate Bill 624.
This is Senate Bill 624.
Okay.
And the 185.015 is the law or the statute that provides the commission with the rulemaking authority, and so therefore the question of why was rulemaking authority deleted?
Well, I think the previous role of the administrator was a little broader, and this bill narrows it to more an administrative coordinating function, because you'll see in the there's language about, it's in Section 1, Line 6, is under the supervision and control of, that language is being taken out, so it's kind of scaling back this person's role to more of a clearly administrative, staffed by an administrator, is what you see there in Line 7. therefore, I think the language in ORS 185-015 was less appropriate.
Okay. Does that help, Representative?
Mm-hmm. That does.
Thank you very much,
Sam.
I'm sorry to cause such a consternation.
Not a question for the staff.
Thank you.
Just a comment that I think this really does, as I think it was Mr. Lake said, give voice to the commissions, that now you don't have an agency head, in effect, directing your work, but this gives voice back to the commissions.
That's fine. I'm satisfied with that, Mr. Chair. With regards to the questions on the budget note, because I don't know if it's relative to the substantive bill or not, but it could be. And the reason why I say that is because I think that if we want to give direction to the commissions, and if we want to give direction to the agencies from a standpoint of what are we getting for the $11 million that we're spending total. I know in this budget it's not $11 million, it's about $500,000. But in overall, as Senator Johnson has rightfully pointed out, what are we getting? And to convene a group that's going to then make some determinations and figuring out how this can be consolidated and better put out so people know where to go if they want to enter contracts with the state and that sort of thing, particularly minorities and women and small businesses. If we want to give that kind of direction, I feel very strongly that direction needs to be in a bill somewhere. I don't really care what bill, but it needs to be in a bill. It needs to be in the statutes, because as we have seen over the last number of years, agencies will ignore budget notes when they feel that it doesn't meet what it is that they want to do. With regards to the budget note, if it's a note to us telling us what we've done and what we're expecting the outcomes to be, then I don't have a problem with it. But if we're going to give direction, if we think that we're going to give direction to an agency through a budget note, we might as well talk to the window, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think we get the results from the budget notes that we would like.
Mr. Chair, may I respond? Representative, the direction that we're giving to an agency is to convene the discussion. At least that's the direction I'm heading. I don't want to prejudge in a bill what the recommendations are going to be until we've heard from the affected communities. And I just want to have the conversation reside somewhere. And so it's twofold. It is to remind us, the legislature, that this is unfinished work, and it is to call an agency to the role of convener. Then discussions will occur with lots of folks at the table, all of the affected agencies, the advocacy commissions. I'm making this up right now, but I would presume that this interim inquiry will go on the road. I don't think that it's fair to just take the temperature of Portland and assume that we have completed our work. I could see a couple of field hearings in different places, Southern Oregon, Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon. And then after there had been appropriate deliberation with, not to, the affected minority women and emerging businesses, we would come back then with recommendations that would go into a bill and would memorialize, assuming the bill passed, the expectations that had been developed through these conversations. I think, frankly, the legislature has succumbed to the temptation of trying to tell the advocacy commissions and tell minority women and emerging businesses what they should be doing. I'd rather have a genuine dialogue and have that result in a single proposal or a suite of proposals that develop some outcome. And I'm guessing now, but what if the outcome was the creation of an agency of minority affairs? That conceivably could happen. And so instead of being embedded as little pockets of activity in huge agencies, maybe we put all the activities in one place. They can find it in the phone book. But again, I'm getting ahead of what the conversation may yield. So my idea of the budget note is simply to remind the legislature unfinished work and a call to action under the aegis of some agency. And I'm coming more and more clearly focused on it being the Department of Economic Development to convene the conversation.
Again, Mr. Chair. I don't disagree with the Senator at all. I guess the only, and I agree that we should not have any preconceived notions as far as what the outcomes of the direction of the work should be. I'm just stating that I think that, you know, other things start coming up. People get busy, departments get busy. It doesn't rise when it's not in the statute. It doesn't rise to a level of importance to them, and if they decide that it's something they're not interested in doing, they simply just don't get around to it. And I don't think that a budget note is going to yield maybe I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, you know, so be it. But we all know that budget notes do not carry the force of law, and agencies can decide that they've got other things to do that are more important that maybe are in the statute. I would just like to see the direction given to whoever's going to be the convener, as the Senator has so ably laid out, that it be in the substance of a bill as opposed to being in a budget note that they can choose to ignore.
Representative Byer.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't sure I had any comments.
Oh, I thought your pencil lady was a fine.
Two different conversations, I guess, and I guess maybe we need to have the one before we move this bill. I don't know, unless you were thinking about putting it in there, maybe. But my memory goes back only so far in this building, and I do know that one of the reasons that we have this the office in ODOT was legislatively directed to do that, and I'm not sure how much further back it goes. Hopefully, maybe by looking at this and coordinating it, there'd be less effort in, you know, every time somebody gets frustrated, to go back out to direct another agency to develop a program. So, I mean, if it can help in that way. I'm guessing that most of the other programs have started that way too, but I don't have that history.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I could, and not to...
Please.
I mean, it's a really good conversation, and obviously highlighting that there are a lot of issues around advocacy, but just as a reminder, this bill simply allows the Advocacy Commission's office to contract with the Bureau of Labor and Industries for administrative support that they are currently getting from the Department of Administrative Services. And as Representative Kremelapi pointed out, it also modifies the duties of the administrator, giving more of the, to use Senator Johnson's word, voice back to the commissions regarding how they operate. So it really is a simple bill allowing the office to work better, hopefully, and all these other issues can certainly be taken care of, as Senator Johnson said, perhaps with a budget note and economic development. But it's really not this bill, I don't think.
Right. Senator Whitson.
A question for Ms. Mancy. On line 9, starting on line 9, the board consists of a chairperson. He's going to be appointed by the chairs of the various commissions and the Commissioner of Labor. Who does that administrator report to, and who does that administrator serve at the pleasure of?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsett, the way I read the bill is that it's this joint board made up of the chairpersons of each commission and the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Industries, as opposed to the way it currently is now, the person reports to the director of the Department of Administrative Services. Is that right? Looking for nods out there in the... Feeling the love now. Okay.
So currently, I would assume that administrator would serve at the pleasure of the Department of Director Gass.
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsett, currently that's the way it is now, and the way the language of the current law is that in consultation with the commissions. Well, maybe that was the appointing language. But under this 624, the way I read it, it's this newly created board made up of the commissions, chair people, and the Commissioner of Bureau of Labor would make the decisions about hiring, and I guess that also means firing of the administrator. I'm getting more nods now, so I'm getting warmer.
Okay. We've had a long and lengthy discussion on this. At this point, seeing no further comments, are there objections to... Are there objections to the bill?
Just one other question real quick, Mr. Chair. There's not an objection, but just a question. It says in the staff report from Ms. Manthey that the DAS reports that it would not have a corresponding reduction in expenditure limitation or position authority. But yet, Boley is going to need to hire another permanent half-time accounting technician to do the stuff for the department, for the agency. I'm just wondering why that is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cromwell, at the Department of Administrative Services, and I expect they will jump in and correct me any time that I stray too far, they have an organization we call Shared Client Services, and so it's staffed to provide administrative support to small agencies. And so this is just an increment of the work that they do, and so by losing this work really doesn't mean that they would reduce staff. It would just be redirected.
Okay. Thank you. I'm done.
Okay. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, Senate Bill 624 is passed, and we'll go to the full Ways and Means. And Senator Johnson will be happy to carry the Ways and Means and to the Senate floor.
Cool.
And Representative Beyer would love to carry
it
on the House floor. Okay, and let's move on then to closing the work session on Senate Bill 624 and opening a work session on House Bill 5001. And I guess we need to note that Representative Edwards and Senator Bates are excused.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 5001 is the budget bill for the Advocacy Commission's office. We had a public hearing about 2 months ago on this budget, so it has been a little while. I did send out overview information late last week, so I will spare you in the interest of time of going through that again. Basically, it is an essential budget level budget. There were no policy packages in the governor's recommended budget. I do have, and Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I thought I would just run through the budget portion, and then we could talk performance measures, and maybe we could have one motion on the whole shoot and match. What we've done to accommodate the potential increase in general fund needed as the board negotiates with Boley for administrative services is I have two packages or under the heading of LFO adjustments. Package 806 looks at the administrator position, and the agency is currently budgeted at step 10, which is a little unusual. As I say in my narrative, the Department of Administrative Services indicates that part of the reason for doing that was recruitment issues. So what we've done here, and I gave you a table showing the different steps and what those rates of pay were. What we've done here is we've brought the budgeted step of the position down to step 6, which generates enough dollars to cover the potential increase, general fund dollars, for 624. It also, there was a little bit extra, $4,145. One of the other things that Ms. Farrington has indicated is, and it is also supported by DAS Share Client Services, is that the in-state travel budget may be a little short. And part of the reason, even if you look at history, which is what I did and provided you that detail, it would look like it's fine. One of the things that they tell me is that historically the members have been reluctant to claim their travel. And so we don't have history to look at. So I took the little extra that was left and moved it to in-state travel. That's what package 806 does. It frees up $22,345, which then I spend in package 840. which is to then basically I've shifted dollars from personal services to S&S. It's general fund neutral between the two bills. And if for some reason 624 doesn't pass, that it's our recommendation, obviously, that this $22,000 stays with the Advocacy Commission's office. And so, Mr. Chair, with those two adjustments, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends approval of the Advocacy Commission's office essential budget level. There are no amendments needed to House Bill 5001. The performance measures, we talked about some. Are you
sure? Before this topic goes on, I wonder if you could explain how, if DAS required a level 10 pay grade to get an administrator, why does LFO believe that Boldy can get one for six, a level six? I mean, I'm not sure. I understand what drove it. I mean, you're trying to find $22,000 to make it revenue neutral, but is that reality?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I don't know if it's reality. It is standard practice that when a position is vacant, it's budgeted a second step. Step 10 is the highest step in the salary range, and it seems to me, to say it differently perhaps, is if there's a recruitment issue, it's more a classification issue. It's not what step is being offered. And in other, I think, education subcommittee, and maybe Representative Galizio could help me out a little bit, there was a lot of conversation about the classification and pay rates for administrators of small agencies. There was a great deal of conversation about it. For example, there's 10, their administrator, their director, is at a salary range 23, not a 28. And so one of the things the Department of Administrative Services committed to that in this process would be to look at the rates, trying to get Erica to nod, of all the agencies. So, again, awkwardly said, if there is a recruitment issue related to pay, it isn't the step that's being offered. It must be the classification. And most, so that's where I look for. And you're exactly right. I was looking to make this general fund neutral, and that's the plan I came up with.
Thank you.
Performance measures. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
You had some conversation about performance measures at the public hearing. And while I think that there was some feeling that perhaps there was more work to do on the performance measures, it's still early days for this agency, and as Senator Johnson pointed out, you know, I think we give them an opportunity to work with what they've come up with. They have assigned targets, and then look for opportunities as they work with them. I imagine they're going to have some suggestions on what they would think that better, if there are better performance measures. I'm not saying these aren't good ones. I'm just recalling that you discussed it. I have made no changes. So basically, these are the performance measures that the agency put forward along with their targets.
Senator Johnson.
A couple of comments, Mr. Chair. The first one is that I would very much like to add the best board's practices to this. There have been issues about proper governance, the role of the boards of these commissions. There have been issues in the past that would suggest to me, just as we have added best board practices and governance practices to other performance measures for other agencies, that it would be appropriate to have it here. And really, as all that does is just indicate that we would want all of the commission members to understand their responsibilities with respect to governance and best practices. Secondly, I would hope on number one, that measuring customer service, that the legislature would be included as one of those customers to make sure that the commissions are conferring value into the deliberative policymaking process of the state at the level of the legislature. And then on number four, not just who was touched by the advocacy commissions, but as Ms. Farrington begins to stabilize what's going on, what happened? I don't think it's good enough to just say we touched this many people. I'd like to know that this many contracts were let, or this many entrepreneurial opportunities flowed from the contact, those sorts of measurables. I'm satisfied with these, and I just want to build the record with respect to who the customers are, because I consider the legislature clearly a customer, and then to ask with the chair's indulgence that we add that best board's practices to it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson's absolutely correct. Previously, it wasn't on this because prior to 6/24, the administrator wasn't hired by the commission.
Right.
And so now that they are, you're exactly right that that would be a good addition for this particular. And I can add that in on its way to full.
Okay. Yeah,
we've
got to ask that.
Other, Mr. Chair.
Senator Whitson.
Yes, you know, I've got a couple of concerns. I will support this, but I mean, the one is that we're leaving the. It's just to me, it's really not very put together very tightly. We're saying that we're going to hire someone, and I think we're leaving it open that the salary is going to go up very rapidly in order to get to somebody that we want. And the other is that we're leaving the door open for Bowley to go to the e-board to get more money for administrative costs. I don't think we're, you know. I think, as Senator Johnson said, we just probably need to grasp hands and jump off the cliff here, but it's not as tight as I'd like to see it.
Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the performance measures, on number three, I have a concern about that, and I think over the interim they're going to want to rework that because it says to their legislative outreach is to educate the legislators, the governor, and staff on issues that influence the status of equality for the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office. That tells me that their job is to keep themselves in business, and that's all their job is. And if that's what their job is, then I'm not interested. I think that needs to be reworked. And also, the comment was made earlier about lobbying. That's a lobbying position, as far as I'm concerned, because basically what they're doing is saying, you know, we need to stay in existence just because. On number five, on number five, it says partnerships, number of partnerships overall and by individual commission. So what? That doesn't meet the so what test. What's the effect of the partnership? I think is one of the things that needs to be put in there. And then community presence, number of events attended overall and by individual commissions. I don't care how many different events they go to. I want to see outcomes. And all of these performance measures are outputs. And we need to see what the outcomes are going to be. So I would like to see, and I realize it's early in their existence. So what I'd like to see them doing is in the interim is coming back and working with the Oregon Progress Board, working with potentially JLAC, working with others that have gone through this, and reworking these performance measures so that it really gives us an indication of the outcomes of the office, which I think is going to reflect the outcomes of the commissions themselves.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I would actually support the change in number three to say educate the legislators, the governor, and staff on issues that influence the status of equality for Oregonians. Because that really, I think, is what we're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. And when we get ready for motions, I would be prepared to support Representative Crummell's motion to change that in order to make sure we're achieving outcomes for Oregonians.
Representative Galizio.
Do we use the word underrepresented Oregonians, or do you want to just make it?
I'd be happy either way. I was saying I'd support the motion. I was leaving open the door for Representative Crummell to be the motion maker, but if I made the motion, I'm perfectly happy either way.
Well, I would say that would, because I think number three, the way it's worded, is it's not very clear at all. And I would support the motion with that, the change that I suggested. And on numbers four and six, I don't really see, or it's not evident to me the distinction, the strong distinction between four and six. But I'm going to support right here, so I'm supposed to leave pretty soon. So I'm going to be quiet now.
Okay. I realize the representative has a meeting and he's wanting to vote on this, be that as it may.
Well, then, Mr. Chair, given the lateness of the hour, I would be more than happy to move the bill. I think that I would like to build into the legislative record here, and Ms. Manthey, I think, has the opportunity to do that, that we recognize with the rebuilding of the advocacy commissions that these performance measures may require fine-tuning and adjustment, and just indicate in the budget narrative that there's an expectation that those would be reported back out at some point in time. I'm not sure quite where. But if she can do that, and she's saying yes. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would move the amended House Bill 5001 with the performance. Were you done?
Mm-hmm.
Performance measures amended to read on number 3, educate legislators, the governor, and staff on issues that influence the status of equality of underrepresented Oregonians. And I would add as a performance measure number 7, best business practices for boards and commissions. And with that, Mr. Chair, is my motion.
Okay. You have all heard the motion.
I just want to make the editorial comment because I can see conversations going back and forth. This best business practices is not to suggest anything punitive or negative. This is the outflow of work that Senator Morris and I did last session to try to raise agency awareness of the need to have high-functioning, high-performing boards and commissions with such things as published agendas, open meetings, a chance for public comment, that sort of stuff.
Other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I support the motion that Senator Johnson has made, particularly with the change in legislative in the performance measure number 3 and the addition of performance measure number 7. And I would like to see this office work in the interim to rather than us sort of flying by the seat of our pants trying to reword these here. I think it's best done in the interim. But I think number 3 definitely needs to be changed, and I think that's good wording.
The chair would also like the staff to check with the co-chairs in relationship to the discussion that has been made about the budget note in this. And the chair would be happy to have that budget note appear in this 5001 understanding, and not taking anything at all away from, I believe the correct place for it will be with economic development. But I believe that if it appears in more than one place, more than one set of eyes then, or one committee set of eyes may come to fall on it. Obviously, it has to go through the co-chairs anyway, and I'd leave it to, their discretion. I make this comment, however, noting that the three distinguished senators, ladies of color, that, did not find it appropriate to come to the chair, a white male Protestant, to discuss this particular thing, but did in fact go to the senator, and I respect I respect that choice, because that was in very much a part of her agenda with this, and have found it absolutely essential to talk to her before we went with it had it worked another way. So,
Mr. Chair, just in the interest of making sure that we have a historically accurate record, I sought them out, and I left them with
Chair stands corrected.
I left them with the impression that it was going to occur in one of the budgets that I was responsible for, and so I believe that Senators Carter, Winters, and Gordley thought that they had discharged the response to the question that I posed to them. So I don't fault them for not being here in the slightest. I take responsibility for carrying the message.
Thank you, Senator, for the for that comment. I appreciate that. With that, are there any objections to House Bill 5001? Hearing no objections, so ordered. And do you want to carry this? No, you can't carry it in full.
Not in full, I can't. No.
And Galizio's gone.
All the better to assign it to him.
So the chair will carry it in full. And the assumption is that Senator Johnson would love to carry
yes,
it
sir.
In the Senate.
Yes, sir.
I will carry it on the House side then.
Thank you very much.
And with that, I believe we have concluded our business for the day. We'll close the work session on 5001, and we're adjourned.